Marek's disease is a disease that is induced by a virus, but it is not a disease per se. It's a mix of a lot of diseases. So this virus is able to produce a lot of things. When initially the disease was described, it was just a not really relevant disease that only produced inflammation in nerves in older birds. So nobody really cared about it until the poultry industry started becoming intensive at the end of the 50s, and then it became neoplastic, so it produced tumors. And it was affecting pretty much every single bird, old and young. Mortalities were so high that the poultry industry will not exist as we know today if we didn't find a proper method of control.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
AccuGut C.1 is a proven solution for your coccidiosis toolbox. Give those traditional tools a break and rotate to AccuGut C.1. Visit dsm-firmenich.com/AccuGut to learn more. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost poultry health and performance. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show, brought to you by Wisenetics. I'm Doug Corver, and I'm dedicated to bringing you the latest insights and discussion in the poultry industry. Get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. If you find this episode interesting, please let us know by visiting our website at wisenetics.com. Our guest today is Dr. Isabel Jimeno, and she is a university professor of population health and pathobiology in the College of Veterinary Medicine at North Carolina State University. She obtained her DVM and PhD at the Complutense University of Madrid and spent several years doing research at the USDA ARS Avian Disease Oncology Lab. She became a diplomat of the American College of Poultry Veterinarians in 2002. Her research is focused on various aspects of Merrick disease, including pathogenesis, diagnosis, and control. She's published 64 peer-reviewed papers, 2 books, and 9 book chapters. She's also presented a lot of keynote speaker talks and presentations at scientific meetings. She's received several awards, including the American Association of Avian Pathologists, Bayer Snoyenbos New Investigator Award in 2008, and 2 P.P. Levine Awards in 2016 and 2017. Welcome to the program, Isabel.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation.
So I'm always curious to know, in your career, what came first, an interest in veterinary medicine or an interest in poultry?
In poultry. Probably both. My father was a poultry veterinarian. So I used to work on poultry farms since I can ever remember. So I would join the vet school to actually work in poultry. Now, at that time, I wanted to be a clinician. Then life put me in different lines.
So how did you realize that you were interested in a career in academia?
Well, this was more than a realization, was a pattern of thinking. I was interested in a career in research. So I was working at the ADOL, and research is really my passion, but I was not a citizen at the same time, so I could not apply for jobs there. And the closest to do research was academia. Then once I have been in academia, I realized that I do like academia. There is the chance to make a difference in the life of a lot of people. You are responsible for teaching the next generation of veterinarians, and that really make your life very interesting.
Mm-hmm. So can you talk a little bit about your current role at NC State?
Oh, yeah. Majority, you know, in the university, your appointments get divided by percentages. So most of my percentage still is research. I have 60% of my time in research, and then I have 25% in teaching and 10% in extension. So let me explain you a little bit what I do in it. So for research, I work on Marek's disease, and we'll be discussing more in the podcast, so I won't say more about it. For teaching, I'm teaching the third year vet students. I'm involved also in the residency program that we had at North Carolina State University. And then we have several postgraduate trainings. So right now I have 2 grad students, but we also do a continuous education courses for veterinarians all over the world. And for extension, I do a lot of diagnostics, monitoring vaccination, diagnosis of tumor diseases. We receive samples pretty much from all over the world. I participate in podcasts like that, organize courses, and yeah, pretty much that's what I do.
A worldwide leader in animal nutrition, Adiseo's portfolio of products includes methionine, the full range of vitamins, enzymes, organic selenium, probiotics, mycotoxin management strategies, and palatability products. With such a diverse offering, Adiseo supports its customers with a broad range of expertise, tools, and services to help them maintain a competitive advantage. Adiseo, fueling predictable profits. To learn more, visit Adiseo at www.adiseo.com.
So you mentioned you're an expert in Merrick's disease. How did you discover that, the interest in that disease specifically?
Well, when I was doing my, I was always interested in this disease, even before getting to the vet school. You know, as I told you, my father was a poultry veterinarian. And when I was growing up, Marek disease was a big, big, big problem. So the word Marek disease was not unknown to me. Now, when I was finishing my vet school and I started doing the master, Marek disease again was a problem in Marek, in Spain at the time. So I did my master on Marek disease, and then I had the opportunity to come to the USDA, to ADOL, and then I really fall in love with the disease. I think it's one of the most interesting diseases. I mean, I'm very happy it doesn't happen to humans, because this is a very nasty disease, but it's really interesting from the research perspective.
Mm-hmm. So let's start with the basics. What is Merrick's disease?
Merrick's disease is a disease that is induced by a virus, but it is not a disease per se. It's a mix of a lot of diseases. So this virus is able to produce a lot of things. When initially the disease was described, it was just a not really relevant disease that only produced inflammation in nerves in older birds. So nobody really cared about it until the poultry industry started becoming intensive at the end of the 50s, and then it became neoplastic. So it produced tumors, and it was affecting pretty much every single bird, old and young. Mortalities were so high that the poultry industry will not exist as we know today if we didn't find a proper method of control. So vaccines really came very early. Between 1978 and 1972, we had three vaccines in the market, and then a few years later, we had the SB1 coming out. So they managed to protect really, really good against the tumors. But the reality is none of these vaccines protects against the infection. So what has happened is that the virus has evolved to more virulence, getting used to grow in and replicating vaccinated chickens. So instead of producing more tumors, what now is doing this virus is producing other syndromes. So it is more neurovirulent, it's more immunosuppressive, it produces lesions in the eye. So it is a lot of different diseases that this virus can produce.
So what has changed about the virus that makes it present differently than maybe it did initially?
Would be a very good question. The thing is, Marek disease virus is a very complex virus because it's very large. So there are a lot of different genes. And, you know, in the 2000, it became the time in which we could manipulate the genome and start removing genes. And then we realized when we did that, yeah, you remove this gene and something happens, but some other genes take over that function. So it's not really that simple. We don't really have, okay, is that gene or the gene that make it more virulent. So that is the reason why, as of today, still we don't have a proper method to classify virus based on the genome. So what we know is the virus has changed in the way it interacts with the host. So in addition to produce tumors, and that, as I mentioned before, we control really good with the vaccines, is capable to overcome vaccine immunity and still produce a lot of damage in the lymphoid organs. And that's why it's so immunosuppressive. And it has more tropism to produce problems in the neurological system. In a way, also because of this manipulation of the immune system, because what it does is produce a really strong immune response with a lot of cytokine release that make a lot of the syndromes, neurological syndromes happen. So I think the virus has become a master to manipulate the immune system of the chicken to its favor.
Okay. How is it transmitted?
Transmit through the feathers. And actually, the only way it transmits is through the infected feathers and infected dander. And actually, there is a very interesting story. You know, nobody knew how the disease transmitted initially. And there was a scientist in Arkansas that thought, let me see if I get a vacuum of my wife and I vacuum the chicken, if I can transmit it with the dust. And sure enough, he managed to do it. Then after that, a lot of studies came. And yeah, the only place the virus can replicate to produce infectious particles is in the skin. So through the dander, through the dust that you see in the farms, this is where the infectious virus is.
Mm-hmm. So is there any risk to humans if it's in the dander and feathers?
Thank goodness, no. And there have been a lot of studies with that. You know, any disease in a food animal that has tumors, it was always of concern. And there were papers trying to link it, but there have been a lot of studies. Marek disease only infect the gallinaceae family, so the chicken, the turkeys, the partridges. It doesn't, quails, it doesn't infect other species of avians. It doesn't infect mammalian cells. They even did studies back in the 70s trying to infect monkeys, and they was not able to infect them. So, no, thank goodness it's not causal for humans.
So you talked about the immunosuppression and some of the other signs. How does that impact productivity of the birds?
A lot, and a lot more than we think and we know. The problem is, you know, when you don't see something, you tend to think that doesn't exist. So immunosuppression is not something that you can actually measure with something, especially with Marek disease, because there are so many different mechanisms and the virus is able to do so many things in the immune system that we don't really have a proper tool to measure it. It is not happening at the same time as tumors, so you don't see tumors. We might see the lymphoid organs perfectly fine, but still the bird is not able to mount a proper cellular immune response or a humoral immune response. So we did a study in my lab in which we created a model to recreate this immunosuppression induced by the most violent viruses. So in chickens that are perfectly fine protected against tumors, if you challenge with these VV plus, and then you vaccinate with a CO vaccine for laryngotracheitis and challenge them, the Marek disease virus that have initially doesn't let the CO vaccine work at all. So it's as well as not vaccinating them. So what is the situation in the field? I'm sure it's happening the same thing. We use commercial chickens. We use viruses that were isolated in the United States. And we were able to reproduce that in the lab. So it is very likely that in farms that they have these more virulent viruses, even though they don't see tumors and they don't see lymphoid organ atrophy, they have a level of immunosuppression. They might have more coccidiosis or less response to certain vaccines, more laryngotracheitis, more problems of infectious process, condensation at the slaughterhouse, bad production. All these things could be induced by Marek. Now, the good thing is only the VV plus, extra plus produce it, not the whole spectrum of viruses. So there are some farms that they will be fine and some farms that they will not.
Is there a geographic basis to the virus? Is it distributed anywhere there's chickens, or is it some countries more than others, or some regions of some countries more than others?
The virus is everywhere. Whenever you have commercial chicken, you are going to have the virus. Even backyard, the number one disease is Marek disease. But how hot the virus is, it depends in a great deal of certain, there are some hot spots. There are some farms that historically have more problems. Some countries, like, for example, the south of Europe have more problems. And the problem is once a virus of certain virulence get into a farm, it doesn't really get replaced by viruses of less virulence. So, for example, Dick Witter did a lot of studies isolating and characterizing virus in the 90s. And he found certain areas in Delaware, North Carolina, Georgia, areas that are very heavily dense for poultry, that they were VV plus. Then later on, John Vann went back to those farms and see which virus they have. And anytime a VV plus was there, we could not find anything less than a VV plus anymore. So you see the farm and you live with it.
So once the disease is present, is there anything that can be done, or is it strictly a matter of preventing infection?
Vaccines are by far the most important piece in the control, but we are doing a lot of other things other than vaccines. I mean, since the 1960s, we know that genetics play a major role. So every single company have the resistance to Marek disease as a trait. So we already have chickens that tend to be a little more resistant that they could be for Marek. Besides of that, biosecurity is very important because vaccines take around 5 to 6 days to actually develop the proper immunity. And if the challenge happened earlier, then the vaccines cannot really work. So trying to delay as much as possible that infection is very important. And then, of course, a proper vaccination. And that's something probably we can discuss. But Marek disease vaccines are very unique because we don't infect with the virus. We infect with infected cells. And if you have a vial of a vaccine, majority of the cells that are in that vial are not infected with vaccine virus, only percentage of it, maybe 5%, 20 at the most. And of course, the cells that die earlier are going to be the infected ones because they are not healthy cells, right? So any problem, any mismanagement of the vaccine will reduce the dose of the vaccine drastically, and that will not help in the control.
So when looking at a vaccination program, how should the vaccine be handled, or how should the vaccination program be managed in order to maximize the effectiveness?
Well, these are infected cells, so they come in liquid nitrogen. It's critical to keep the cold chain. The vaccine is going to be liquid nitrogen. The vials are going to be upside down. So there is any thaw at any process, you are going to be able to see it. But the thing is, even if it is not completely thaw, if the liquid nitrogen levels were down, then you lose titer. So every single hatchery will have a record of the levels of liquid nitrogen. It should be there. Then you have to be very careful when you get your vials, and then you thaw them very fast in a water bath. And as soon as they thaw, then you reconstitute. One key thing that people tend to forget is you should never leave the vial on the water bath. You have to keep it moving it, because the moment the vaccine gets room temperature, to freeze these cells, they use the MSO that create a kind of crystal. It blocks the formation of crystals in the cells, so you need it for freezing them, but it kills cells at room temperature. So you mix them so you never have room temperature in this vaccine anywhere in the vial, and then reconstitute. Then you mix it really good, and you keep on mixing periodically, because you know your cells precipitate. And you try to use it in a very short amount of time, certainly no more than an hour, if you can do in 40 minutes best. Another thing you should not do is using antibiotics, which is not happening. A lot of people use antibiotics with it. And you should not over-dilute, which is not always happening. In broilers, many times you do 1 to 2, sometimes even 1 to 4. And you should not add any other thing in the vials. Like, for example, I remember a case of trying to add alternative to antibiotics like oils or things like that, because you can not only block the vaccinator, but also reduce titers.
So it sounds like a pretty complex procedure. In your experience, does the complexity of maintaining that proper handling and proper reconstitution, does that have a big impact on the effectiveness? Like, is it common for something to break down or somebody to try something new and innovative that really doesn't work, leading to vaccine failure?
I will say that people are doing a good job in general, because otherwise we will have a lot more problems with Marek's disease than we have. And the vaccines are working good. However, whenever we have outbreaks of tumors, in my experience, is either because the vaccines were not handling properly, the biosecurity were not good, or both of them. Majority of the times. There might be other situations in which there is chicken infectious anemia middle, or there is viruses that are a lot more virulent than the vaccine that are using can control. But most of the times, they're having some problem in the handling of the vaccine.
So there's a pretty strong incentive to do it right.
Yeah, and actually people at the hatcheries are trained. You have particular people trained. You have logs. There is auditing constantly from the companies. But sometimes, you know what the theory is, and then there are other practical approaches that it doesn't happen. For example, the use of antibiotics with the Marek disease vaccine, we know it's not a good thing to do. We know it from the 70s, but it still is being done in routine manners. Not in routine manners, in more often than it should be. Or, for example, the over-dilution of the vaccine is a mistake. And I think the mistake came with the idea that if my vaccine has high titers, high PFU, then I'll be able to dilute it. And that is a wrong concept. When vaccines come with a high PFU, what it means is that they need this PFU to protect, because not every product needs the same number of PFUs.
So what do you think is coming in terms of the challenges to the industry as it relates to Marek disease? You talked about changes in the virus happening, but also some new developments in vaccine technology or vaccines. What do you think the future holds?
Well, I think the future has to get protocols of vaccines or vaccination that allow protection not only against the tumors. Right now, our goal always has been protecting tumors, and we succeed. We have very good vaccines. Respense is a wonderful vaccine. It can protect against tumors really good. Now we know that we have chickens that are protected against tumors, but they don't really are protected against immunosuppression. So we need vaccines that can protect against immunosuppression. Ideally, we should look for vaccines that either control transmission or control infection. Because if we don't manage to stop either one or the two, the virus will continue progressing to other more virulent forms. We are forcing the virus to do that. Imagine you have a vaccinated bird, and then the virus is able to replicate and transmit well in this vaccinated bird. So you are selecting those strains that can do that better. So that is easy to say and difficult to do for any herpes virus. For Marek disease, in which we don't even know if there is a receptor or which receptors they have, the virus actually never comes out from the cell. So the way a cell gets infected is by another infected cells go and establish contact and then create kind of tunnels. So it's very difficult to stop that.
If you're enjoying this episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics, please remember to like, subscribe, and share it with your friends and family. You can also set the notifications to on from our channel in YouTube so that you don't miss any other upcoming episodes. As always, please feel free to leave us a comment or suggest new speakers and guests. And your feedback is always valuable to us. So a field veterinarian, what should they be looking for in terms of signs or symptoms as it relates to Marek disease in the field? If they walk into a barn, what's the way to assess whether Marek's disease is present or potentially a threat?
Okay, the vaccines protects really good. It can get even 97% protection against tumors. Now, what that means, there will be certain level or certain percentage of chickens that might develop tumors due to Marek's disease without you considering you have a problem. So that is one thing that people have to keep in mind. When do I have a problem with tumors? You can see sporadically birds with tumors, but you don't have a problem as a flock. Now, you start having more losses due to tumors that you were expecting in a normal flock, then is when you start concerning that you have a problem with tumors due to Marek disease. We'll divide different scenarios. So let's think about tumors. So when you do have tumors, what you should be doing is understand why the tumors happen. It was that the vaccine was not put properly, or the biosecurity was not good, or do I have a chicken infectious anemia that is making my vaccines not able to work? So you need to do a dissection of the outbreak, because if you do that, then you can control in other flocks. And normally you figure out the reasons. Most of the time you figure out the reasons, and then you can address the problem, because we do have tools to protect against tumors. Now, how about if you have a perfectly fine protected flock against tumors, you don't really see anything, and you start seeing problems, other problems, like my vaccines are not giving me the antibody titers that I was expecting, other vaccines, or I'm having coccidiosis, or I'm having dermatitis, or I'm having inclusion body hepatitis, I'm having all these other problems, and I check and doesn't look like IBDV is a problem, my thymo seems to be good, I don't suspect or chicken infectious anemia, you should never rule out Marek's disease, even if you don't see tumors, because Marek's disease could be the culprit. So that's another way. And then we have seen very recently some cases that are very unusual, and that is making me believe that the virus is already evolving in the field in the way we were expecting that that could happen. For example, we saw recently a case of a bird that they were completely protected against tumors, but they were having severe eye lesions. And if you look at the structures in the eye, every single structure in the eye was packed with Marek disease virus. So they were protected against tumors, but it was producing some other type of lesions. So that is things that we might see in the future. What people will expect is tumors. If there are tumors, figure out what the reason is. If it is not tumors, that's where the problem comes, because there is not so much, the knowledge we have about immunosuppression is minimum. We don't have methods to control it perfectly fine. I mean, right now we know based on the last studies we did in the lab that the chimeric vaccines tend to protect against this immunosuppression. So that could be a tool that we have in the farms right now. But we don't really have the tools to diagnose it. So most people don't even think about it.
Let's talk about that a little bit. What's your main research focus right now? How are you approaching it in the lab?
Well, we have several projects right now. One project that we have is immunosuppression, which is something that I have been studying for years now. And what we are trying to understand is we have two vaccines, one experimental, which is a vaccine that was made with a VV-NDV. It's a very virulent NDV, and they delete the two copies of the MEC oncogene. So this is the MEC deleted vaccine. The MEC deleted vaccine is not in the market, it's not licensed, but it is really, really good to protect against Marek's disease tumors and immunosuppression. Now we also have these chimeric vaccines that seems to be protecting against both tumors and immunosuppression. And then we have wonderful wristbands that protects very good against tumors, but they don't protect against this immunosuppression due to BB+. So we are trying to understand why that happened. What is that these vaccines are doing in the bird, and what they are doing in the pathogenesis on the oncogenic virus that explain why some birds are protected against tumors but not immunosuppression, or they are protected against both. So this is one of the projects that we have. The other project that we have is completely different. Basically, the vaccines of Marek disease is either administered in the embryo or a day of age. And either embryos or one day old chicken are immature immunologically speaking. It takes about 1 to 2 weeks to have the full immune system. So what we have been doing also for years is trying to understand how the vaccines of Marek disease affect the development of this immune system. And we demonstrated that when you put HVT in ovo, the immune system of the embryo mature much faster. So the baby chick that hatch is more immunocompetent at the age of age, not just for Marek disease, but for a lot of other different things. So when we did this with layer using SPAFAS, we saw that they were more immunocompetent, both the humoral immune response and the cellular immune response. When we did it with broilers or meat type chickens, we saw that it's innate and cellular. It doesn't affect the humoral immune response. But we know that there is this enhancement. So we try to see if this adjuvant effect of HVT could be even enhanced further. So we tried different other adjuvants like the poly-IC or the CPG. And yeah, the poly-IC didn't really do anything. CPG seems to increase. Then we see what happens with other Marek disease vaccines that you put with HVT, and looks like neither RISPENS or SB1 have a negative effect, but doesn't add anything else. So then we try with the chimeric vaccines, and this seems to be promising. It seems that we can go a bit farther. Now we can optimize this effect of HVT also by modifying the dose. So when we did the study with this particular HVT that we used, the sweet spot was around 6,400 PFU. Double, it was worse, and middle or half or quarter was also worse. So there is ways to actually manipulate the way the immune system mature. So this is another thing that we are working. Mm.
How important is maternal antibody protection?
That's a very good question. It does something, but it doesn't do enough. So what maternal antibodies do is delay the initial replication of the virus. So it shifts the pathogenesis of the virus for about 21 days. So, for example, some of the syndromes that Marek disease virus do. We know that if you get a chicken and you challenge with a VB plus MDV, at 8 to 9 days, if they don't have any maternal antibodies, it's going to develop transient paralysis, which is it's brain edema. The bird develops paralysis and then either recover or die. Well, with the chickens with maternal antibodies, this happens, but it doesn't happen at 9 days or 8 days. It happens around 30 days. So it just moved to 21 days. We know that with our maternal antibodies, the virus is able to produce severe damage in the lymphoid organs very early, around 5-6 days after infection. Well, with maternal antibodies, this is shift, again, to 30 days. So in a bird that is not vaccinated and has maternal antibodies protect to a certain extent until 30 days. It delays everything. It doesn't protect against tumors because that is way later. But for these 21 days, you have a level of protection. So countries that send to slaughterhouse the chickens early, as long as they do it earlier than 30 days, they should be okay. But if they wait, if it's after 30 days, you're going to pay a toll in immunosuppression or in other syndromes.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Making life easier for animals and those who care for them is the mission of Jeffo. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. Boehringer Ingelheim, health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Probiotech International, creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. For over 40 years, Jeffo has been redefining animal nutrition with high-performance, non-medicated solutions. At the core is Jeffo Matrix technology, a disruptive approach that synchronizes nutrient release for precise delivery. Active in 65 countries, we develop cutting-edge formulas, essential oils, enzymes, and acidifiers to optimize health, performance, and reproduction. Jeffo is transforming animal feeding, making life easier for animals and people who care for them.
Well, that's been a really fascinating look at the current state of knowledge in Merrick's disease. I've got a few questions for you that maybe hopefully are a little bit more fun than the topic of serious disease. What's your favorite poultry-related book or resource that you go to?
Well, the Bible for poultry people is The Diseases of Poultry. I mean, that's, for example, when you study for boards, that is your book. So anytime, even today, I mean, having worked on Marex for 30 years, but today still I many times go back to the chapter and look at it, because you find, you know, older papers that you didn't realize that they were there, or it's a wealth of information. So yeah, that is.
How about outside of agriculture? What's your favorite book or resource?
You know, I used to read a lot. I love reading, but I have small kids and my life turned upside down. So it has been a while since I read. I like very much Isabel Allende, very much like those type of novels. I used to read when I was young, Dostoevsky and a lot of other classics. But nowadays, I hardly have time to work and take care of my kids and survive.
Yeah. Well, that's an issue for a lot of us. So
I hope it's a phase.
Yeah, no, that's great. So Isabel, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your knowledge on Merrick's disease. I learned a lot, and hopefully our listeners will as well. So that concludes another episode of the Poultry Podcast Show presented by Wisenetics. Thanks for joining us today. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. If you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review, because your feedback is important to us. Visit our site at wisenetics.com and learn more about all our podcast segments like poultry, swine, dairy, beef, feed mill, crops, and pet food. I'm Doug Korver, and I'll see you next time on the Poultry Podcast Show.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.